furniture was all broken into perfection comfort, and the house smelled like basil and lemon all the time. When Dad moved out, we couldn't afford that place, so we moved to a one-bedroom on the far side of town. It was on the fourth floor, with brown carpet and walls that seemed hollow. Its major selling point was its tiny balcony, overlooking a brown man-made pond and facing hundreds of other identical balconies. Even so, all through elementary school, that tiny apartment was the sleepover spot among my friends. Then I got to junior high, and Mom was promoted from a teller at a local branch to an actual banker at one an hour and 20 minutes away. For the first couple months, she'd drive me back on weekends, or my friend Lauren's mom would bring Lo out on a Friday night, and we'd take her home Sunday. But the trips, the phone calls, the texts tapered off as she found her footing in her new class, and I made friends with some of the girls on the yearbook committee in mine. Then we moved to St. Louis in eighth grade, so Mom could help open a branch there. It went so well, they sent her to do the same thing in eastern Pennsylvania a year later. Junior year, we moved twice more, first to North Carolina, then to a suburb outside Alexandria. The apartments got nicer, walls thick enough that you couldn't hear the neighbors fighting or passionately making up, ceilings that were smooth instead of popcorned, yards with trees and wooden fences where before we'd had gravel and chain link. Mom started working to get licensed to become a loan officer, and with the coursework on top of her job, the housework fell to me. By then, we rarely had guests. Mom had no time for a social life, and I pretty much gave up making friends. I didn't see the point. None of those friendships lasted beyond the next move. A year later, I left for college in Columbus, where I met Sadie. My heart keens when I picture her. Petite, whip-smart Sadie. We sat next to each other in an elective class that was more a semester-long Jane Austen book club on our very first day of college. The professor had us go around and introduce ourselves, say which Austen character we most related to and why. 90% of our classmates said some variation of, "I'm a total Lizzie." The one boy among us declared very boldly that he was a Darcy. A couple of girls picked Eleanor Dashwood or Jane Bennet. It was probably too honest for a stupid get-to-know-you game, but when it was my turn, I said, "Unfortunately, I'm probably Charlotte Lucas." She was the most practical character I could think of, even if her practicality did lead her to marry Mr. Collins. Beside me, Sadie erupted into laughter. "Don't feel too bad. I'm probably Lydia." After class, she asked me if I wanted to go get coffee with her on her way to her next class. I genuinely couldn't imagine just walking up to someone and starting a conversation, let alone asking them off the bat to hang out. I tried that once after the eighth grade relocation. I believe the girl's response was, "Ew, why?" Sadie befriended pretty much everyone she met, but that day, I felt like she chose me in a way I'd never felt chosen. She took me to my first frat party. I took her to Cellar Cinema, a tiny theater in the basement of a bookstore that Mom and I had gone to during our campus visit the year before. Sadie got us into bars, despite our lack of drinking age IDs, and I dragged her to a backyard poetry reading where a guy I liked performed a truly horrific homage to Allen Ginsberg's Howl that quickly resolved my crush on him. We always joked that Sadie would have thrived as a lady in Regency England because she embroidered and knitted, had a ballerina's posture, and spoke both Spanish and French fluently. We joked I would thrive in an apocalypse because I was kind of scrappy, already used to living on noodles, and could probably be pretty happy talking to no one for days on end if I had enough books around. For the next 4 years, I rarely had to make my own friends or score my own invitations. But whenever Sadie organized group hangs or threw Halloween parties, my job was to channel my mother and play host. So the second Miles leaves to scoop Julia up from the airport, muscle memory takes over. I wipe the kitchen down, sweep the crumbs into one corner, and vacuum them up. I bring a couple of candles out of my room and light them, opening the windows to let in fresh air. With a deep, preparatory breath, I open the hall closet, ignoring the right-hand side and its excess of thrifted lace tablecloths, votives, and the dreaded dress for my canceled wedding, and dig around for clean sheets and fresh towels, which I stack on the couch. I vacuum under the cushions, scrub the bathroom sink, and load the handful of dishes into the washer. It occurs to me then how little food we have on hand, so I grab my bag and keys and head out to wander the fluorescent-lit, mostly empty aisles of Tom's. I can't buy much produce here without devastating Miles's farm-stand-loving heart, but I grab a few apples and some broccoli, a loaf of bread, a jar of peanut butter, and a couple other essentials. On my way to checkout, I also detour to grab 4 new toothbrushes, just in case. I still make it home before them and have just finished putting everything away when 2 very loud voices move down the hallway and the door swings open. I see Miles first. "Hey," he says, stopping short, grinning like he's pleasantly surprised to see me here, like he forgot we live together. I'm not sure if this is a compliment or an insult. His sister barrels into the kitchen right behind him. She's tall, as tall or possibly taller than him, and string bean skinny with the same impish nose, perfect teeth, and dark hair, though hers is chopped into a little wavy French girl bob, complete with baby bangs. "Hi," she says brightly, hurling, actually throwing her duffel bag in the general direction of the living room.
"You must be the roommate, Daphne."
"And you must be the sister, Julia," I say.
"What gave it away?"
She hooks an arm around Miles's neck and shoves the side of her face against his.
"We look nothing alike."
Total stab in the dark, I agree. She pulls away from him, scratching her jaw.
"You need to scrape that roadkill off your face," she says, beelining toward the fridge. "I think I just got fleas."
She opens the door and looks over her shoulder at me, though not in time to catch Miles mouthing something along the lines of, "Told you."
"Have you seen my brother without a beard?" Julia asks me. "He's adorable, like a 15% less hot version of me."
"I don't know, I kind of like the beard," I say. She narrows her gaze on me. Then she straightens, lips pursing sourly as she considers me, like I'm a particularly tricky poker opponent. But I'm not. I'm terrible at lying, except when that one unhinged demon possessed me to make up a whole-ass boyfriend. Suddenly, Julia spins toward Miles, pointing a finger in his face.
"You fucking told her to say that!"
she shouts, victorious. He swats her hand out of the way.
Jules, inside voice. "Our crotchety neighbor is going to come yell at us."
"Admit it!"
she cries, swatting his hand. She spins toward me, face alight, a more extreme version of Miles's lit from within, delighted by everything grin.
"I'll give you $20 if you tell me the truth, Daphne."
"Daphne,"
Miles warns, trying to get past her. Julia puts her arms out to her sides, stance wide, a defensive guard keeping us from passing the deceit between us.
"Daphne,"
she shrieks through laughter as Miles tries to push past.
"Tell me the truth."
"I already did," I cry, running past both of them to the far side of the counter.
"I like the beard. It's grown on me." "Daphne."
Julia straightens up, hands on her hips.
"We're supposed to be a team here."
"You just met,"
Miles says, rounding the counter to stand beside me.
"We've been living together for over 2 months.
Yeah,
Julia says, turning to resume digging through the fridge.
"Holy shit, you have food in here. Like, not leftovers, I mean."
"We do,"
Miles says, right as I say, "We do." He glances at me.
"Thanks."
Julia snatches a grapefruit sparkling water and faces us as she pops the tab.
"So how long have you guys been together?"
I choke on air.
"What?"
"We're not,"
Miles says, clearly a little embarrassed. Julia's dark brows flick upward as she sips, then slams her can on the counter. If he's a Labrador, she's more of a clumsy pit bull, thwacking into corners and swinging her head into coffee tables without batting an eye, completely unselfconscious. I like her immediately. Julia's head tilts.
"That's not what Petra said."
"You talked to Petra?"
Miles says.
"Not in a Judas Iscariot way," she blurts. I chewed her ass out over text a few weeks ago and I never heard back. Then last week, she messaged me out of the blue to say she's happy for you.
How thoughtful, I grumble. Julia's gaze wanders back to me.
Is there any particular reason she thinks you guys are sleeping together?
I wonder if I have hives visibly forming on my neck. I also wonder if I have bruises where Miles bit me. That's my fault, I tell Julia. Long story, but Peter, my ex, called me and I accidentally just... Her brow rises as she waits for me to go on. It's an exact Miles Nowick expression, but somehow it's so much sharper on her. I straight up lied. I finish. She stares at me for a second, then bursts into laughter, hinging over her hips and resting her whole face and arms on the counter as she shakes with giggles. When she finally peels her face off the granite, she says, "That's fucking amazing." Miles smiles faintly.
That was my reaction too.
Julia drums her hands on the counter for a second.
So, should we get drunk?
I laugh. Daphne works in the morning, Miles says. She hosts story hour at the library on Saturdays, does all the voices. I don't think he's trying to embarrass me. I think he genuinely believes this is an interesting and maybe even impressive tidbit to share with his ultra-hip, ultra-confident little sister.
Oh, hell yeah, we should go see that, she says.
You really don't need to do that, I say. Tomorrow's book is The Stinky Cheese Man.
You can't talk me out of it.
She angles herself back toward Miles.
What about you? You want to rage tonight? I'm sure you could afford to blow off some steam, judging by the...
She gestures toward his jaw. He grabs the edge of the counter and lets his hips sink away from it, stretching his back with a groan.
Julia, he says, I'm 36. If I get drunk, I pay for it.
Oh, bullshit, I tease. Last time, you were up on a breakfast sandwich run while I was still shaking with the sweats in bed.
Ha! Julia cries. Gotcha!
I can manage that every once in a while, he allows, but we're supposed to go out Sunday night with our friend Ashley.
I'm surprised he remembers. Then I look over his shoulder and realize he's added it to the calendar, right next to the long arrow through the Sunday column.
You'll like her, Miles tells his sister.
Then his forehead wrinkles.
Or you'll hate her. I'm actually not sure.
Time will tell,
Julia replies with a shrug and a slurp of seltzer.
Should we order pizza?
He chances a glance at me, his voice a teasing scrape.
I'm sure Daphne would love that.
A whisper shivers down my backbone. I love the sounds you make.
Actually, let's do something else, I say.
I try to think of the least sexy food I can come up with. Most food, I realize, is at least a little sexy.
Nachos? I say.
14. Saturday, June 22nd, 56 days until I can leave. Unfortunately, Julia was serious about story hour. They're late, of course, but just barely. I smell sun-warmed grass and the spicy kick of wood smoke, and when I look up, they're there. Julia picks her way through the concentric rings of parents, babysitters, and kids, with Miles whispering apologies in her wake. He shaved his beard, no doubt thanks to Julia's badgering, which had peppered our conversation until late into the night when she accepted my 58th attempt to go to bed. Some people grow beards to hide or accentuate certain features, the way I switched my hair part at 19, and when I saw how it balanced my slightly crooked nose, never looked back. The thing, it would seem, Miles has been hiding all along is that he's diabolically handsome, with angular cheekbones and a jaw that sort of looks like it might cut you if you were to run a hand over it, or your tongue, you know, whatever. Fairly cruel timing for us to have just agreed not to cross the platonic friend's boundary. His eyes catch mine, and his mouth quirks. That part of him is still soft, playful, even, with this new look. It makes me feel like I swallowed a sword inside of a helium balloon. Under the best circumstances, surprises are not my thing. But if I were going to unexpectedly see the man I hooked up with the night prior, I would at least prefer it not happen, A, while I'm reading aloud, and B, on a day he looks better than ever and I decided to walk to work, during which a surprise drizzle frizzed my hair and raccooned my mascara. I did my best to clean myself up after I clocked in, and of course it immediately stopped raining, but we'd stuck to an inside story hour just in case, and I'm sure the buzzing overhead lighting isn't exactly giving me a heavenly glow. When I finally reach the end, Julia jumps onto her feet, clapping with extreme enthusiasm. Everyone else breaks into the polite applause I'm used to. After a chorus of squeaky voices saying thank you at their parents' urging, the crowd disperses and Julia bounds up to me.
Miles wasn't kidding, she says. You're really good at the voices.
I peek over her shoulder to where her brother has paused to give directions to a mom who I'm pretty sure was born here. A young mom. It seems he was right about the beard's effect on the older ladies because they're not the ones eyeing him this time. Julia follows my gaze and guffaws.
Oh, look, he made a new friend. How novel.
Has he always been like this? I ask.
As long as I've been around, yes, she replies. God knows where he got it from. Definitely not our asshole parents.
I'm jarred by the casual mention of their parents. It's like turning over a locked box only to realize there was a crack in the bottom all along.
Miles once bumped into the high school band teacher at the grocery store and left with an invitation to her wedding, she tells me. He wasn't even in band.
An image of crisp stationery, elegant typeface slanting across it, blossoms in my mind. Julia's face softens.
Shit, sorry. He told me about the invitation thing.
It's fine, I say. Julia cocks her head, curious.
Really? Fine?
No, I say, but I'm trying to complain less. She catches me glancing toward Miles and snorts.
If you're trying to emulate my brother, I wish you the best of luck. No one can repress negative emotions like him. He's had too much practice.
He looks, as ever, like human sunshine, totally engaged, completely interested in this stranger, and it makes my chest pinch. I'd assumed the sunny disposition came naturally.
I mean, she says, we had the same upbringing and I didn't turn out chronically fine, so I guess, in a way, it's natural. When I was a kid and he'd moved to the city, he used to come back and pick me up every Saturday for breakfast at McDonald's. I'd spend the whole time trying to get under his skin because I was the worst, but I could never get a rise out of him. He's excellent at ignoring the bad stuff.
What about you? I ask. Julia chokes over a laugh.
Oh, I invite the bad stuff to try to fuck with me.
Having finally extricated himself from hot mom, Miles joins us.
What did I miss?
Nothing,
Julia says innocently, right as I say, your sister wants to get into a knife fight.
I'll call Gil, Miles says. We can get her a kitten at the same time.
Am I missing something?
Julia asks. Ashley sidles up then, too.
Just one of their adorable best friend jokes, she tells Julia.
You must be the sister.
You must be the friend I'm either going to love or hate,
Julia says. Ashley's shoulders wiggle, half shiver.
Intriguing.
Should be fun either way, Julia says. So should we all head to Cherry Hill, throw tiny pretzels at Miles while he's working?
We don't serve pretzels,
Miles says, audibly offended. As amazing as that sounds, I say, I need to get some promotional stuff finished for the readathon.
And I was thinking I'd do meal prep tonight so I can be worry-free tomorrow.
Ashley interrupts herself with a gasp, looking to Miles.
I just figured out where we should go. We should take them to Barn.
Barn, I say, as in a building on a farm?
As in a bar, in a barn,
Miles says,
on a farm.
There is no place on this earth, I say, like Waning Bay.
Barn has goats,
Ashley offers, peeling away from us to help a couple of patrons check out before we close for the day.
You'll love it.
Julia's phone pings and she checks it.
Weren't you supposed to be at work by 4:45? She asks Miles.
Shit.
He moves toward the doors, Julia still texting as she shuffles after him. He turns over his shoulder and calls,
Sunrise is before 6. Be ready at 5:30.
5, I counter. Are you coming, Julia? At 5 in the morning? She says sunnily. I'd rather eat aluminum foil, but you two have a blast.
I creep out of my bedroom at 4:58 a.m., tiptoe past Julia, snoring on the sofa, to the kitchen, sandals in hand. I flick on the light beneath the mounted microwave and drink a glass of water while I wait for Miles to emerge from his room. 5 o'clock comes and goes. Then 5:05. 5:11. I'm trying not to be unreasonably grumpy, but this is fuck everything early, even for me, and if there's one thing I truly hate, it's waiting on people. Several dozen unhappy memories cycle through me, a worst of film reel, and I'm too tired to adequately bat them away. So while I'm yawning so hard my jaw pops, I'm also back in Mom's and my first apartment without Dad, waiting by the front window, looking up every time a junker sputters past. Waiting on the snowy curb outside my elementary school, dragging my boot toes through blackened slush, telling myself that if I count to 100, Dad will be here. And if not, then by the time I reach 250. Counting and waiting until my mom pulled up, stressed out and still in her work heels, apologizing through the open car window on his behalf.
Sorry, something came up, I guess.
Waiting at the mailbox for birthday cards to show up. Waiting for a phone call on Christmas. Waiting. Waiting for someone who rarely came, feeling worse every time until finally, I realized that the feelings wouldn't stop until the waiting did. You can't force a person to show up, but you can learn a lesson when they don't. Trust people's actions, not their words. Don't love anyone who isn't ready to love you back. Let go of the people who don't hold on to you. Don't wait on anyone who's in no rush to get to you. I consider crawling back into bed and finishing a polish on the upcoming readathon publicity blast. Then the front door clanks open, a slice of light pouring from the hall. Hey, Miles whispers, lifting the thermoses in his hands. You ready? Been ready since 5, I tell him. He leans forward and peers around the cupboard to see the oven clock. Shit. He passes me one of the thermoses. I gave myself an extra 15 minutes and there was no line, but then I got caught up talking to the barista and... Anyway, I'm sorry, Daphne. I shake my head, the grumpiness clearing. Miles is doing me the favor here. It's fine. I slip my feet into my sandals. Let's go. It's cooler outside than in our apartment, the nip in the air making my arms and legs tingle. I can feel my leg hair growing and wonder why I bothered shaving last night. Because you have a crush on your roommate, my inner dialogue provides helpfully, and you want him to look at and touch and probably even lick your legs. No, I argue with myself. It's because I want to wear a skirt to work tomorrow. I'm not buying it, though. The last time I wore a skirt at work, Hansie Stanley told me I was going to give him a heart attack. The hem reached mid-calf. Luckily, Ashley walked past the desk at that exact moment and a 3-month ban was issued. I'm so tired, I'd be willing to drink jet fuel mixed with espresso, but to my surprise, when I sip from the thermos Miles gave me, it's spicy, sweet, creamy perfection. This is chai, I say. He unlocks the door and climbs in.
I thought that's what you wanted.
I get in too. No, it is. I just... Thank you.
No problem.
He jams the key in the ignition, and the engine grumbles, but the car doesn't start. He tries twice more before it catches, and then we're cruising away from our silent street, the sleeping city black and blue as a bruise. At the kayak rental place, there's one other couple there already. Both blonde but comically disproportionate in height, and judging by the bright, chipper, full-volume conversation she's maintaining with the sleepy-eyed man, they're on a first date.
which also might somehow be an actual vacation?
She keeps up a steady line of questions that he parries swiftly about each other's jobs, finance and theme park management respectively, and each other's pets, 3 cats, 2 German shepherds, from the register to the transport van to the boat launch. Without discussing it, Miles and I both hang back and let them launch their kayaks, pretending to busy ourselves with packing the provided dry bags and getting our life vests on until they're a ways out.
"Remember when you said that I like everyone?"
he asks me as we drag the first of our kayaks into the water. "Yes," I say.
"I don't like them."
He tips his chin toward our vanmates' backs, shrinking as they rapidly pump their paddles back and forth. I suppress a smile.
"Do you know them?" "After that 7-hour van ride, I know enough," he says.
I chortle. "It took us 6 minutes to get here."
"They're my enemies."
He steadies the kayak and gestures for me to get in.
"So all I need to do to stay in your good graces is not snort 25 Adderall before 6 a.m.
"Good to know." "Or get 3 cats and name all of them the goddess," he adds.
"Really? That was actually my favorite thing about Keith."
"My favorite thing was when Gladys had that coughing fit and couldn't talk for like 11 seconds.
"It's fun when you're sassy," I tell him, climbing into the kayak and dropping into the wet, slippery seat.
"Enjoy it," he says. "I don't plan on getting up this early ever again. I hate to admit it, but Petra was right."
I lean over the side of the kayak and splash him, his eyes snapping wide.
"What the fuck?"
"That's your Petra tax," I say. "Talk about her again, and I'll call Gladys and Keith back here and make this a kayak caravan situation."
"Fine, fine,"
he agrees, walking back up the shore to pull his own kayak into the water.
"But if you mention Peter, I'm tipping you over."
"Who?" I say innocently. The truth is, within 5 minutes of pushing away from the shore, Peter has made his way to the forefront of my mind, because my arms and shoulders are already burning from exertion, and Miles can only paddle about twice before he has to pause and wait for me to catch up. The dark horizon has only just started to soften as light bleeds along the top of the water, and I already know this was a huge mistake. We'd been planning to do a 6-mile loop around a small island in the bay, where the more adventurous locals, people like Miles and Petra probably, like to camp. Tucked back in the bay like this, there's no real current or waves to contend with, not like there would be in the lake proper, but I'm still woefully underprepared.
"You can go ahead," I call across the water.
Miles laughs.
"Why would I do that?"
"Because I'm pretty sure I'm actually moving backwards," I say.
"It's water,"
he points out.
"In every direction. There's nowhere to be. Unless you're serious about catching up with Keith and Gladys."
"I have neither the intention nor the emotional capacity to do that," I say.
"Then let's chill," he says. "There's no rush."
"Well, if that changes, feel free to ditch me."
"Yes, Daphne, if something changes and I need to escape a freshwater shark, I'll paddle my little heart out and leave you for dead."
"Are there really sharks in the lake?"
I ask.
"I'm offended you'd even ask that,"
he says.
"Well, someone's got to defend Lake Michigan's honor, I guess,"
I say.
"Why not me?"
he agrees. We paddle slowly, parallel to one another, the gradually lifting sun painting everything in pinks and golds.
"I know it's a cliche," he says after a minute, "but being on the water always does feel like what I imagine church is for some people."
"I get that," I say. "Out here, you're small and there's no one else around, but you're not lonely. It's like you're connected to everyone and everything."
"Exactly," he says. "And you remember to marvel. It's so easy to forget how incredible this planet is."
I throw a glance his way.
"I think you're pretty good at the daily marvel."
"Sometimes," he says.
Then,
"You are too."
I snort. I'm more of a cranky pessimist, and we both know it.
"You moan every time you eat," he says.
"I don't think you're as pessimistic as you think." I flush, reroute the conversation neatly.
I think as a kid, the library was the thing that made me marvel. I never felt lonely there. I felt so connected to everyone. Honestly, I think it also made me feel connected to my dad.
There it is, a hideously embarrassing truth dropped right into the middle of a conversation, a fact I've never admitted aloud. It might be an oversimplification, but it's the truth.
He's why I love libraries.
Big reader?
Miles guesses. I laugh.
No. He just never planned his visits ahead or had any money, so he'd blow into town and take me there to check out some books or do an activity or whatever. So when I was little, I really associated them with him. It felt like our thing.
Are you close?
He asks. Not at all, I tell him. He's lived in California for a long time now, and his visits are unpredictable. Doesn't come when he says he will, shows up when you're not expecting him. But he was a really fun dad when I was a kid. And the library trips felt like this amazing gift, specifically from him to me, you know? Like he alone had the key to anything I wanted to read. My mom never had time to get over there, and I was kind of terrified of the school librarian, so once I got old enough, I'd just walk over to the local branch after class, and mom would pick me up when she got off work.
He grins. A good librarian makes all the difference.
I angle myself toward him.
You joke, but it's true.
I'm not joking, he says. If you'd been my librarian, I would have read a lot more.
Because I would have told you audiobooks count, I say.
For starters,
he says.
Also, I would have wanted to impress you.
My face tingles.
Julia's great, I say.
She is,
he agrees.
She's the best.
Have you always been close? I ask.
Pretty much,
he says.
I mean, I was like 13 when she was born, so I was out of the house a lot, but when I was home, she followed me like a puppy. Like, literally, just crawled around after me.
I grin, picturing it. A brown-eyed, dark-haired baby Julia scooting along after a scrawny, brown-eyed teenage Miles.
She was only 5 when I moved to the city,
he says.
But I tried to make it back to see her as much as I could.
She said you visited every Saturday, took her out.
I catch a subtle grimace.
I just needed to get her out of the house every once in a while.
There it is again, that crack in the box. Just as quickly, though, it's flipped over, its contents hidden. We fall back into silent paddling. Sweat rises along my hairline, drips down the seam of my ribcage and the ridge between my shoulder blades. You can talk about it, you know, I finally tell him.
Talk about what?
He says. Anything, I say. Whatever's bothering you. I'm actually a better listener than talker.
You're a great talker, he says. But nothing's bothering me. I'm fine. I just need to figure out what she's running away from.
Did she say she's running from something?
I've only just met her, but it's hard to imagine Julia running from anything. Even if she stumbled upon that black bear who was addicted to cocaine, I picture her fighting back and faring pretty well.
She keeps insisting she's here to be there for me, he says.
Well, I say, maybe she is. He gives me a look.
She never tells me when things are bad, but she's not good at hiding it either.
He looks away, out toward the island, and shakes it off.
I'll figure it out. It's fine.
When he looks back, he's grinning, seemingly unbothered, though this time I'm not totally convinced.
You still good, or you want to turn back?
He asks, clearly done with the topic of Julia. So I let it go.
I'm good.
When the sun is high enough for the water to settle into its usual brilliant crystal green, Miles stops paddling and takes off his sweatshirt and shirt in one move, dropping them into his lap. I hold out for another 20 minutes until I can no longer stand the way my tank top sticks to me, then relent and peel it away from my bathing suit.
It's pretty amazing,
Miles says. I pull my shirt off and glance over at him as I slip my life vest back on. He's gazing toward the forested island, the last morning remnants of mist clinging to it, his kayak bumping into mine.
It is, I say, feeling the need to whisper it for some reason. He looks.
Thanks for coming with me.
Thanks for inviting me, I say. He tucks his chin, a teasing curve to his lips.
Even though you hate it?
I don't hate it, I say. He seems unconvinced. I actually think I like it, I say. I'm just not good at it, and it stresses me out feeling like I'm making someone wait on me.
Why?
He says. I shrug.
I don't know. But I don't mind,
he says. You say that, I reply.
I'm not training for the Olympics, Daphne,
he says.
Why would I give a shit?
When we used to try to hike together, I'd get out of breath, and Peter would... I realize my mistake too late. Miles probably would have missed the slip-up if not for the way my sentence screeches to a halt. The corner of his mouth quirks as he reaches toward my kayak. I shake my head, but he doesn't slow his progress. No! I shriek as he knocks me to one side. I didn't say it!
You 100% said it,
he argues. Different Peter! I cry, laughing as we struggle against each other for a minute. Different Peter!
Should have called him Pete then,
Miles says. He gives the kayak one more hard shove, tipping me over into the cold water. It sloshes over my face for just a second before my life vest pops me above the surface. Are you kidding me? I shriek, swimming toward him, grabbing the side of his boat now.
I didn't break the rule, he argues.
You dumped me in the lake, I say, trying and failing to tip him in. That's so much worse.
Fine, fine, he says. I'm getting in.
But as he says it, he's grabbing his paddle, slicing it into the water, trying to get away. I grab hold of one side and yank as hard as I can. It takes a few seconds of struggle, but in the end, I manage it. Miles crashes into the lake. He resurfaces, soaked and sputtering, and slicks his hair out of his face, eyes crinkled against the sun.
Didn't even check if I could swim or not,
he tuts, pretending to be aghast. I would have saved you, I say.
You? He says. I'm like 40 pounds heavier than you.
First of all, I say, you're absolutely not, and second of all, I have a life vest. We would have been fine. He swims toward me, loops an arm around my back, my stomach lifting into my chest at the feeling of his skin on mine, his weight pulling us downward as my heart buoys into the back of my throat.
Your physics are off, Daphne,
he says against my ear as we start to sink. I wriggle around to face him, pushing away before anything can keep me there. I knew you could swim, Miles.
How?
He asks. One, everything about you, I say. Two, I've seen pictures.
When you and Ashley were snooping?
He teases. Yes, when we were snooping, I admit. He nods, treading water in front of me.
Thought so.
Have you ever snooped? I ask.
No,
he says. I study him until he laughs, glances toward the island again, then meets my eyes.
Fine. A couple of times when you've left your door open, I've peeked in. But it's not like I'm digging through your drawers.
Excuse me, I say. I did not dig through your drawers. Not that I would have needed to, since they were all open.
You looked in them.
He swims closer. I didn't, I say.
In case you were wondering, he says, your drawers have never been open while your door was.
I wasn't wondering, I say.
It's been spotless, he says. Not a single hint as to who you are.
Pretty boring of me, I say.
Mysterious, he counters, like a puzzle.
Or a highly organized silverware tray, I say. Under the water, our calves brush against one another. A thrum travels straight up my thigh into my abdomen.
The same way you dress.
Like a silverware tray, I say. He shakes his head. Another graze of our legs, a little higher this time.
Like a secret.
A heady rush of tension. To diffuse it, I say, like I'm hiding an extra set of arms.
Think I would have noticed that,
he says. Our hands brush under the water. The second time, our fingers slip together,
knuckles briefly sliding against each other before we pull away. I backstroke away from him, turning my face up toward the sun. When my pulse has settled, I ask, "Should we paddle a little longer?"
"If you want to," he says.
I stare across the glistening turquoise water toward the shore of the island. It's not as far as I thought. It feels possible now that we could make it.
"I want to," I tell him.
15. "I love it," I say.
"Told you."
Ashley bustles past me toward the light-strewn patio of Barn, which I now know is stylized as capital B, capital A, capital R, lowercase n. My hair is still damp from my post-kayak shower. My shoulders hurt where the straps of my dress rub into my sunburn, and my arm muscles feel like jello, mixed with wet concrete. Miles and I didn't even make it to the island, let alone around it, before I accepted I couldn't go any further. That was also when I realized my biggest mistake of the day. I'd saved absolutely no energy for the paddle back to shore. We'd had to stop every few strokes so I could gather my strength, while Miles paddled back and forth in a wide zigzag. It would be a while before I kayaked again, before sunrise or not. So far, Barn is much more my speed. Julia and Miles pile out of the back seat of Ashley's hatchback into the grassy Field Comb parking lot.
"Oh my God, a taco truck!" Julia says,
hurrying to catch up with Ashley as she strides toward the patio. To the right of the parked taco truck, there's a dance floor and a stage, a cover band blaring out "The Boys of Summer." To the right sits a big red barn, its doors propped open, people filing in and out with booze-filled mason jars and beer bottles clutched in hand. There's also a partially covered bar jutting out from the side of the barn, every inch packed.
"I've loved boyfriends less than I love this place," Julia calls back to us as Miles is shutting the car door.
"That's just our attachment issues," he tells me.
"Oh?" I look over at him. "You share them? That's nice."
"She once dumped a guy because he thought Mamma Mia 2 was better than the original," he tells me.
"Wow, a diehard fan," I say.
"She hasn't seen either movie," he says. "She just thought having such a staunch opinion about it was a red flag."
The infamous low chortle sneaks out of me, and his smile is so affectionate I wish I could roll myself up in it like a blanket. "Well, if nothing else," I say, "she and Ashley the fish hater should have something to bond over."
"Yeah, they'll probably ditch us by the end of the night,"
he agrees. Our eyes catch. My blood hums. My body warms with phantom sensations, memories from two nights ago. He brushes his fingertips over my bright red shoulder.
"This hurt?" he murmurs.
"A little," I admit. "But that's what I get for trying to be the cool, laid-back girl who doesn't need to slather every inch of her body in sunblock every half hour." We've stopped moving, just barely out of reach of Barn's twinkling lights, Julia and Ashley lost somewhere ahead in the crowd.
"She might be cool and laid back right now," he says, "but she'll feel less fancy-free when she's taking monthly trips to a dermatologist."
"Nah, cool, laid-back girls never face consequences for their spontaneity. It's how they're able to keep being cool and laid back. They're genetically predisposed to health. They're not allergic to poison ivy or shellfish, and they never get migraines, even if they only sleep for 3 hours in a cold tent, and they never burn in the sun."
"Huh,"
he says. "What?" I ask, right as I spot Julia in line at the food truck, waving us over.
"I just realized I'm a cool, laid-back girl," Miles says.
I start toward Julia and Ashley, toward the safety of a buffer, calling over my shoulder, "I could have told you that." The four of us eat fried fish tacos on one of the wooden picnic tables set up in front of the food truck. We order bourbon and sweet tea from the outdoor bar, briefly poke our heads inside before deciding it's way too packed. We wander around the back of the barn to the goat enclosure, where one is rubbing its face against the fence while the others are tucked away in a covered area inaccessible to bar patrons. We scratch the lone goat's head for a while, then pump our hands generously with the provided sanitizer before making our way back to the snap-lock dance floor. The band cranks out country covers of hits through the decades, and we dance until my hair has dried all the way through, then until it's sweaty again. At one point, Miles goes to get fresh beers and a cider for me, and comes back wearing a handful of glow stick necklaces, a sloppy pink lipstick mark on his cheek.
"Of course!"
Julia shouts over the music, not interrupting her dancing whatsoever and not even close to winded. Oh, to be 23. She jerks her head toward Miles.
"Leaves for a beer, comes back with a hickey."
I think she must mean figuratively, but that doesn't stop me from scanning his throat as he's passing out our drinks. When he's doled them all out, he drops one of the glow necklaces around Ashley's neck, then gives Julia one, which she adjusts to be smaller so she can wear it like a tiara. Then he puts the last two around my neck.
"Thank you,"
I shout. The band's just started in on a cover of Crimson and Clover, and half the audience is drunkenly singing along around us.
"My pleasure," he says.
"I see that."
I flick his cheek just below the kiss mark. I hope that sounded friendly and jokey like I intended, and not incandescent with jealousy.
"Part of a bachelorette party scavenger hunt or something," he explains. "Can you get it for me?"
I brush my fingers over the condensation on the outside of his beer bottle, then smudge the mark out of his skin.
"Can't take you anywhere."
He leans in so I can hear him.
"If I had a beard," he shouts, "this never would have happened."
"You could be in the ghost face mask from Scream and this would still happen," I say.
He turns into me, his mouth nearly touching my ear, the spicy ginger and bready tang of beer hitting the back of my nose.
"Are you jealous?"
he teases. I push up onto tiptoes, bracing a hand against his shoulder, tipsy enough to play along, but not drunk enough to be honest.
"It'd just be nice to earn my own glow sticks once in a while."
He touches my waist. Heat unfurls over me, skull to toes. Automatically, I lean into the touch, and his fingers curl around my hip as he ducks his head again.
"The bachelorette party's still by the bar. I'm happy to introduce you."
"And miss this song? Not enough glow sticks in the world."
I turn into him, and my heart thumps quick and sharp at the way his dark eyes dilate, the way the corner of his mouth tips up in a wry smile. Looking at his mouth, I forget what we were just talking about. I swallow a thorny knot and touch the scratchy corner of his jaw.
"Beard's almost back."
His hand circles my wrist lightly, an electric frisson leaping from him to me.
"Petra hated it too," he says, his voice a buzz, half heard through the music.
My stomach gives a decisive downward jolt.
"I don't hate it," I say. "It's grown on me."
The corner of his mouth ticks higher, and his thumb runs along the side of my wrist.
"So I should keep it?"
I clear my throat.
"That's up to you."
"And I'm asking you,"
he parries, his smile slightly mischievous, but his gaze dark and heavy enough to pinion me to the spot. The moment feels like a held breath or a soap bubble, something that can't last, that has to break one way or another. And then it does. The song ends, and Julia barrels back toward us, baby bangs stuck to her forehead and mascara ringed around her eyes.
"Who's up for a shot?" she asks,
and Miles steps back from me.
"I'll get them,"
he volunteers, and breaks away through the tightly packed crowd, casting one last glance over his shoulder, a hazy look that makes me feel like a Christmas present he's one sleep from unwrapping.
"Are you and Miles sleeping together?" Ashley asks at the Bao Bun food truck on our lunch break on Monday.
I'd just taken a sip of lemonade and reached out to accept my receipt from the cashier, and I barely managed to avert my face before spit-taking.
"Ashley?" I chide, pulling her away from the counter.
"What?" she says. "That guy's like 60. I don't think we're going to surprise him."
she adds thoughtfully. Unless, of course, he's also sleeping with Miles.
I'm not sleeping with Miles, I tell her.
Okay, fine. I must have misread the signals.
Her tone makes it clear she doesn't believe it. The cashier calls our respective receipt numbers, and we grab our food from the counter, then walk toward the picnic tables on the grassy knoll overlooking the public beach. One time, I admit. Something happened once. A smile spreads across Ashley's pink-painted lips.
I knew it. Tell me everything.
There's nothing to tell, I say.
That bad?
No, I say, a little too emphatically. At her smug grin, I add, I just mean, I'm not even sure how it happened.
Well, you're still ahead of me because I don't even know what happened.
We just made out a little bit, I say.
In what context? She says.
At home, I say. We were watching a movie and, I don't know, it just happened.
What were you watching? She asks.
Does it matter? I say.
It sets the scene, she says.
Honestly, Daphne, have you never had a close friend before? The last conversation I had with Sadie drifts through my mind like acrid smoke. But strangely, I also feel a slight lift in my stomach at Ashley's implication that that's what we're becoming, close friends.
Not in a while, no, I tell her.
She grabs my elbow.
You know it's not like my social well is overflowing these days either. I just meant it's supposed to be fun to rehash all this, not embarrassing. This is a judgment-free space. We're 20 yards from the library, for God's sake. Yesterday, I had to ask a guy to stop leading wild pigeons inside with a breadcrumb trail.
Again?
I say. Not Larry, she replies. Different guy.
Well, I didn't have to entice Miles with breadcrumbs, I say.
Always a good sign, she says.
We were watching a Fast and Furious movie. I spit out.
Which one? She asks immediately.
I really couldn't tell you. One with Vin Diesel in it.
Would make anyone horny, she says. And what, it was weird?
No, it was... I tamp my voice down, lest the food truck operator decide to lean in. Weirdly good.
What's weird about that? Ashley says. Miles is hot.
It's weird because I haven't kissed anyone but Peter in like 5 years, and I didn't think when I finally did, it would be my ex-fiancé's new fiancé's ex-boyfriend.
When you put it like that...
Anyway, we agreed it was a huge mistake, I say.
Really?
She says.
Why?
I shrug.
I mean, for every conceivable reason, we live together, we're both just getting out of long-term relationships.
She rolls her eyes. You don't have to dive into anything serious. I finalized my divorce over a year ago, and I have yet to make it to a third date with anyone. No, I know that, I say. It couldn't even be serious since...
Her eyebrow sharply arches. Since?
I heave a sigh. I wasn't going to tell anyone from the library about this until things were more definite, but Ashley's my friend now. I owe it to her. I'm looking for a new job. She stares at me like she doesn't understand.
You're obsessed with your job. Sometimes I catch you just staring at spreadsheets like they're winning lottery tickets.
Okay, that's a bit of an exaggeration. I say, but yes, I love my job. It's the town I'm less sold on. I mean, I like it as a town, but I only moved here for Peter. My mom's on the East Coast, and I don't know. I'm just not sure I can hack it here. I'm sorry I didn't tell you sooner.
She shakes her head, sets her bow bun down. Look, I get it. We're adults. We have to do what's best for ourselves. It sucks for me, but I get it.
Thanks, Ash. Really.
She shrugs, picks her bao bun back up, and takes a huge bite. Mouthful, she says, But if you're not sticking around and you don't want anything serious, then I really don't see what the issue with Miles is.
The issue is, I begin, he said it shouldn't happen again.
Huh, she says.
Huh, what? I say, instantly panicking a little.
Nothing, she assures me. That just surprises me. Last night, there was a vibe.
I think Miles could be alone in a room with a paper bag and there'd still be a vibe, I say.
though honestly, I'm relieved someone else picked up on it too, that it wasn't just wishful thinking. I shake it off. Vibe or not, the bottom line remains unchanged. I'm not going to have a one-night stand with my roommate. Can I ask? I trail off, trying to decide how to phrase it. Is it too soon for me to ask what happened between you and Duke?
Well, since you just told me about your clandestine roommate hookup, she says, taking a huge bite of bao bun, I think we've officially graduated from work friends to real friends.
My heart pinches at the thought. I wish I'd made more of an effort to get to know her sooner. Even before the breakup, it would have been nice to have a friend like Ashley.
Duke was my high school boyfriend, she says, then pauses to chew for a second. We broke up when we went to college. Then we both ended up back here. Eventually, we ran into each other at the YMCA, then met up at his car in the parking lot, as I mentioned. Got it? So 9 months later, Mulder is born, she says. And Duke was great during the pregnancy. We weren't really together, but he was present. And afterward, I think we were just, like, drunk on our perfect newborn baby. So when he told me he wanted to marry me, I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. We're already a family, you know? And for like 5 years, things were good. Then Mulder started kindergarten and I went full time at the library. Mulder started taking karate and gymnastics and Duke joined a rec hockey team and she shrugs. I don't know. We still worked okay, but our whole relationship revolved around our kid. Even the other couples we hung out with all had kids Mulder's age. That's how we chose our friends. It's how we chose what shows we watched. It was all we talked about. And once our son got busier, the relationship just stopped feeling like enough for me. So we tried doing date nights, and that helped, just having dedicated time for the two of us, but something was still off. It felt like we'd reached our final form. Like, I'd ask him to take a cooking class, and he'd say, we don't like cooking. Or I'd be like, what if we move to Portugal? And he'd be like, we don't have jobs in Portugal. I mean, I hesitate to say this, but those seem like reasonable responses. Oh, totally, she agrees. But the conversation just ended there every time. There wasn't a, what if we visit Portugal in the summer? There wasn't even a, why do you suddenly want to move to Portugal? Why did you? I ask. I didn't, she says, like this should be obvious. I just wanted to feel less settled. I snort. We should have traded lives. Ashley shakes her head. There's steadiness and dependability, and those are great, but settling? Just deciding you already know everything you like and dislike on the entire planet, everything you're good at, every friend you're going to make, and every food you're ever going to eat? The guy wouldn't even let me repaint our bedroom. I wanted to know new parts of him, and I wanted to find new parts of myself. So I asked him to go to couples counseling. And it didn't work, I say. She smiles, but somehow it's the first flash of sadness I've seen on her. For me, it did. But he wouldn't go. He was willing to be good to me, but he wasn't willing to be any better. I stuck it out as long as I could. Then one day, I woke up and I couldn't anymore. So I told him. And a part of me expected him to finally get it, to say he'd do therapy, try. But he didn't. Shit, I say. I'm so sorry, Ashley. She gives a blasé shrug. Sometimes it's terrible, but this was my choice. I think a lot of my friends thought I was a selfish idiot, giving up a pretty good thing just for the hope of a really good thing. But how can I teach my kid not to settle if I'm not willing to fight for the life I want? I tried so hard to love the one I had, and if Duke had tried too, I would have held on. But he's just one of those guys who doesn't believe in sharing his business with a stranger, so therapy's out. He didn't even want me talking to our friends about it all, so when we separated, it seemed like it was out of nowhere. Everyone took his side, and honestly, even the ones who didn't still stopped inviting me to things. It's awkward to have one single person in a room full of couples, I guess. A weight sinks through me. I think about my last conversation with Sadie. You both matter to us so much. It had hurt to be lumped in with him. But what hurt worse was, I didn't believe it. If we both meant so much to her and Cooper, wouldn't she have called me at some point in the last 2.5 months? She didn't want me anymore. Not on my own.
God. Ashley shakes her head. Maybe that's why I'm so starved for gossip. I never felt like I could tell anyone what was going on with us.
Damn, I think I've had a breakthrough, Vincent.
Not to mention, you know my whole last name now, I say.
See?
She takes another bite.
Official friends.
16. Tuesday, June 25th. 53 days until I can leave. Miles is on his way out the door when I get home, a piece of toast clamped in his mouth and his keys, phone, and water bottle clutched in one hand. Running late, I guess, holding the door open so he can slip out. He nods, plucks the toast from between his lips.
Had to give Julia a ride. To a date.
She's been here like 3 days, I marvel.
I know. Guess she met him at Barn.
A few seconds tick by, in which neither of us seems to have anything at all to say. It's the first time we've been alone in the apartment together since Julia showed up. I break first.
Anyway, I'll let you go.
Right. See you later.
He turns to go, but almost immediately does an about-face.
I forgot to mention, I can't do this Sunday.
Oh. I try not to look crestfallen. I try not to be crestfallen. It's honestly probably for the best if we spend a little less time together.
No worries.
The thing is, he begins.
Miles, really, it's fine, I promise.
No, I know, it's just...
He pauses.
I'm committed to this thing Saturday night.
I nod eagerly, like I'm not only personally invested in, but also thrilled by his having plans.
But I have 2 tickets, he says. So I was thinking maybe you'd want to go with me?
Oh, I say. I must take too long to go on because a slight smile tugs at his mouth, his eyes sparking with humor.
There's no pressure, Daphne, he says. If you don't want to.
No, I say. It's not that. It is exactly that. I just might have to get some work done, I say. The work being not finding myself alone with Miles Nowak on a Saturday night and incapable of maintaining the friendly boundaries we've established. Sorry, I force out. Maybe next time. He nods.
Sure,
he says.
I'll see you later.
I nod too. See you. He pops the toast back between his lips and disappears into the stairwell at the end of the hall. I shut myself into the apartment and wait for the full body regret to simmer down. It's for the best. I'm stuck here for at least 53 more days, and I'm not going to blow up my life again in that window. I drop my bag and shuffle deeper into the apartment. Julia's shoes are in the front hall, her clothes everywhere in the living room, and bedding still wadded on the sofa. The bathroom counter is smeared with makeup, and she's left 2 separate hair tools plugged in. Minus the fire hazard, I don't mind. As a kid, I was so jealous of my friends who had siblings. My best memories were all of movie nights with Mom or our long Saturday morning wanders through kitsch shops and record stores, but so much of my childhood was sitting in an otherwise empty apartment, longing for the kind of noise, clutter, permanence that comes from having a family, rather than just one overworked mother. Julia might be a slob, but having her stuff everywhere makes the empty apartment feel a little less lonely. I unplug her flat iron and clean up a bit, then take a shower and make some Easy Mac. While I eat, I email potential sponsors, along with a few higher-profile authors we hosted back at the Richmond Library, to ask whether they could record videos to air as we meet our fundraising goals throughout the night. Then I check my phone calendar against the wall calendar. To my surprise, Miles has added his winery shifts in blue, and Julia, I presume, has added in scratchy red across this Thursday, "Commit murder." Underneath it, I scribble as small as I can, "Call FBI about Julia." Then I get in bed and try to read,
without any success. Then I try to watch an action movie and quickly realize it's not fun to watch that sort of thing alone, so I take to scrolling social media, seeing college friends' summer pregnancy announcements, a Richmond coworker's recent trip to Thailand to see family, and then, without any warning, there she is on my screen, Petra. And sure, that's jarring enough, but it's not what makes me fling my phone across the room, pulse racing. It's who posted the picture. It's who else is in it. The tiny woman with her, arms wrapped around Petra, both of them beaming in front of decimated plates of chocolate waffles on an orange-checked tablecloth. I only saw the image for a second, but it's seared into my mind. How could it not be, when I recognize the tablecloth, the waffles, and even Petra's beaming friend? I crawl across the bed, heart in my throat, and brace myself before flipping the phone face up again. Cooper posted the picture. I don't need the geotag, Richmond, Virginia, to know where the shot was taken. It's our brunch spot, the one he, Sadie, Peter, and I used to go to most Saturdays. Peter and Petra are visiting them. I can't breathe. My clothes feel too tight, my skin hot and itchy. I stumble to the window, and my arms have gone too weak to open it on the first try. When I finally do, there's no breeze to break the heat anyway. It's one thing to be replaced by an ex. It's another to feel like your whole life has been handed over to someone else. I think I might be sick. I even go into the bathroom, just in case. "This is your fault," a voice whispers from the back of my mind. "You're the one who built everything around him. Move to his hometown. Let Sadie's and my relationship get absorbed by the four of us, our weekly girls' nights becoming double dates, our weekend trips replaced with couples' vacations, our conversations unfolding in our group chat instead of on long phone calls. I'm the one who put all my eggs in the incredibly awkward basket of willfully befriending Scott and the rest of Peter's Waning Bay buddies instead of making my own. Never mind how hard it is to make headway into a group who's mostly interested in rehashing shared memories. Moved into a house that belonged only to Peter." Miles was right. I need to stop fixating on how much I've lost and focus on building something new. I already knew my old life was over. Sitting here and simmering in it won't do me any good. I close the toilet and sit atop the lid, pulling up my messages with Ashley. "You said you had a hobby I could borrow," I type. "Every fourth Wednesday of the month, aka tomorrow," she writes. "You in?" "What is it?" I ask. "All you said is it isn't organized exercise." "Still true," she replies. "Don't show up in raggedy sweats." "Is it disorganized exercise?" I ask. "That's certainly closer," she says. "Great," I say. And then I text Miles too. Maybe it's a mistake, maybe it's not smart, but being smart hasn't paid off well for me thus far.